Last week, you may remember, we found ourselves in verse number 8 of the Beatitudes, and there Christ explained to his disciples that it was possible for them to know God. And I tried to remind us last week that it is, or for that they shall see God, they can know God, they can have a personal, intimate relationship with God. And last week I tried to remind us that we as believers can also see God, we can know God, we can have a personal, intimate relationship with Him. God does not have to be a distant figure that we're not able to get close to. We can have a wonderful, thriving relationship with Him. That is wonderful news if you stop and think about it. And yet, while that is available, while that blessing is available, as I've tried to say each service, there are some things required on our part for that to be true. And so in verse number 8, Christ said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." It's not just anyone who claims to be saved. It's not just anyone who may be saved but is not living for the Lord. It has to be the person who in their heart they have a desire to do that which is right, to do that which is pure. It doesn't mean that they'll be perfect. It doesn't mean that they'll not falter, that they'll not make mistakes, but they have to have a desire to do what is right. And so many people who identify themselves with Christ, they really don't have a desire to do right. They like the name, they like the association maybe by way of a religious connotation, but they don't really have a desire to do what is right, and then they wonder why they don't really have this close and personal relationship with God like others seem to have. And so it's something to give consideration to. It's very important. Now this evening we're going to obviously move on to verse number 9 tonight. Going to spend a few moments looking at this, but tonight I want to have us think about something. I say this so many times, I apologize for the redundancy of it. I know you know this, but I'm going to say it anyway because it gets our thinking where I want us to go, okay? And that is this: every one of us are identified by a name. Every one of us are identified by a name. We have a birth name, a legal name, we have a given name, and on it could go. I'll use myself as an example for just a couple of moments so that you understand where this is headed. Obviously, my name, my birth name, my legal given name is Kyle Don Osfeldt. All right, now you don't care about that, but I'm just telling you, whenever I was born, that's what my parents decided to name me, Kyle Don Osfeldt. Now, while that is what my name is, there are very few people who just refer to me as Kyle. Susie refers to me as Kyle sometimes, but most often she refers to me correctly as Babe. You like that? I went for the whole Lord thing like Abraham and Sarah. That didn't work out, so I'm settling with Babe. But generally speaking, she's just going to call me, "Hey, babe, would you do this?" Or, "Hey, babe, do you mind this?" Unless she really needs my attention, then she'll say, "Hey, Kyle." And then I know who she's talking to. I know who she's referring to. And that's what she calls me. My parents, now, obviously they name me Kyle, but more times than not, it's, "Hey, son." And those are the only two people in this world that refer to me as that. But whenever I hear my dad's voice or my mom's voice to this day say, "Hey, son," if me and my brother are not both there at the same time, I know who they're talking to. It's me. Why? Because that name, son, identifies me. My brother calls me Don Don. There's a story behind that I'll not bore you with, but he's the only person in this world now. My grandma used to call me Don Don. She doesn't do that anymore, but thankfully it stuck with my brother. So whenever I talk to him, whenever I visit with him, it's, "Hey, Don Don, what's up?" Not much. Most of you refer to me as either Brother Kyle or Pastor. Others of you may refer to me as other things, I don't know, but to my face, that's what you refer to me as Brother Kyle or Pastor. And then something happened a couple of months ago. I thought this was interesting. I'd never been referred to in this manner, but somebody that just kind of casually knows me and I casually know them referred to me as a human being. He said, "You're a human being." Now, my first thought was, "What?" But here's what he went on to explain of this statement, "a human being," that this is what Indians used to call white people who were honest and kind. Now, I didn't know that, and I'm not sure he's even telling me the truth, but that's what he said to me. So I thought, you know, if you refer to me as a human being and that's what you mean by that, then I'll take that as a compliment. So here I am. I'm identified as Kyle. I'm identified as son. I'm identified as brother Kyle, as pastor, as Don Don, as human beings. And I like all those things. Why? Because there have been other times in my life I've been referred to as a lot of other things. You know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you? You would never call me this, but some people have said jerk. Right? And you're such a jerk. Well, that's not a real polite statement, but I'm afraid that it's fit more times than I care for it to. I've been identified as someone who was stupid. You're stupid. And? Yeah, I know. Because I've had my stupid moments. Have you not had your stupid moments? All right, so I mean, hey, they've called me jerk. They've called me stupid. They've said some other things. I mean, like many of you, I've been called names that I couldn't begin to repeat and still be in good standing with the Lord. I don't want to be called those things. Why? Because those things aren't nice. They're not kind. They're not thoughtful. They're not good. That's not what I want to be identified as. You want to call me pastor? Fantastic. You want to call me brother Kyle? Fantastic. If you're comfortable in your relationship with me and it's just Kyle and you don't mean anything disrespectful by that, hey, then fantastic. If you start calling me son, I'll think you're weird. If you call me Don, I will have an issue with you. But I mean, in general, I know some of you are going to do that just to get under my skin. That's fine. I'm ready. I'm a big kid. You'll forget about it in time. I know that you will. But I'm just saying there are certain things I'm okay with being identified as or called in life. But what about this one? What about to be called a child of God? Well, of all the things that you could be called, of all the things that you could be identified as, what greater honor could there be than for someone to identify you or me as a child of God? They may not use those exact words. They may not express it in that exact sentiment. But can you imagine for just a moment if your reputation was such, if your testimony was such, that essentially what people in this world were saying was this: now there's a child of God. Wow. If essentially what they were saying is this: now that's the real deal right there. If someone was essentially saying that person is a true Christian, that someone is he's genuine, he is real, he is authentic. If they didn't use these words or not, but they were basically saying this, that he or she is a child of God, what greater name could we be called? I don't know of a greater name that I could be called. As much as I love to be called Dad by my kids, it would be far more important and far more honorable for me to be called a child of God. As much as I love being called husband and babe by Susie, I would far more enjoy the title given to me as a child of God. I mean, there would be no greater title in all the world or no greater name given to me in all the world than for someone to look and say, now that right there is a child of God. Why is that such an honor? Can we give attention to this for just a moment? Why is that such an honor? Because there are so many who claim to be a child of God, but if they were not the ones professing it, no one would accuse them of it. Follow this, please. There are so many fakes and phonies and frauds that in many situations of life, in many instances of life, those who would like to be identified as a child of God, that is not how a world would identify them. You may call yourself a child of God, but if that's what a child of God is, I'm not interested. You may call yourself a child of God, but where I come from, we call you a hypocrite. Why? Because you claim the title, you claim to have this relationship, but your actions and your mannerisms, they don't really live up to it. And so here is this idea, this thought that a person could be called a child of God. And here's what I think some people think. They think something like this, well, yeah, that's not going to happen. People will always think what they want to think. And I understand that some people are just obstinate and hard-headed and, you know, difficult to deal with. But as we look in verse number 9, the last part of the verse, here is what Christ says to his disciples. They shall be called the children of God. They shall be identified as the children of God. Now, what is Christ saying to his disciples? He is saying this, that in the world they were living in, it was possible for them to be identified as, or to be known as, or to be called God's children. Hey, you know, you could be called a jerk. You could be called stupid. You could be called obnoxious. You could be called a lot of different things. But it is also possible, Christ says to the disciples, to be called a child of God. It's wonderful. But you don't get to be called a child of God or a part of the children of God by living just any way that you want to live. Just like you don't get to see God by living any way that you want to live, and just like you don't get to enjoy mercy by living any way that you want to live, and on it goes. You don't just earn the reputation of being a child of God without some effort on your part or some effort on my part. So what does Christ say to the disciples is the key, in addition to everything else, the key to being called the children of God? Well, notice what he said. He said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." In order to be identified in this world as a child of God, Christ said, you know what you got to be, disciples? This is not real difficult, is it? You got to be a peacemaker. Now, these are two words that I want us to think about for just a couple of moments, okay? Because I think sometimes in our minds we think we know what words mean, and many times we're very close. But there are certain things that we need to take into consideration. So this word peace, what does it mean? Well, I looked it up in a dictionary, and here is what the word peace meant primarily in this particular dictionary, okay? To be in a non-warring condition as a nation. A non-warring condition as a nation. The idea would also be, in this word peace, an agreement or a treaty between antagonistic nations. So some kind of a treaty, some kind of an agreement between two nations that don't necessarily like each other of this idea will try to be nice and civil toward one another. Now, as you think about that, it makes sense from certain standpoints. But here's what we also know, okay, and I promise you I'm going somewhere with this, so stay awake and stay in tune with what we're talking about, okay? We understand the idea of peace and this idea of not being at war, but that doesn't necessarily mean true peace. Does this make sense? Why? Because the nations are still antagonistic one toward another. It's not peace more than it is this general agreement or this general idea that we'll let you exist and will exist, but just keep in mind we don't like each other. See, tonight you understand what I'm about to say, that right now we are not at war with, say, Russia. But we're not exactly all warm and fuzzy with Russia. As a nation, we are not right now technically at war with Iran, but we're not exactly all warm and fuzzy with Iran. North Korea and South Korea, they're not launching missiles back and forth at each other right now, but they're not really at peace. There's just this agreement that you stay over there, we'll stay over here, and we'll try not to annoy each other enough to the point of attacking each other. Israel and the Palestinians. You see how this works? This idea of peace in the world's mind, in the world's eyes, it's this idea of, hey, we're not at war, therefore we must be at peace, or we've got some kind of an agreement, some kind of a document or a treaty that says, okay, we won't shoot you and you won't shoot us, we'll not bomb you and you'll not bomb us. But that is not what peace is. What is peace? Well, in addition to not being at war, it is also the idea of tranquility, of serenity, or a calm. To be at peace means to be in a state of tranquility, a state of serenity, or calm. Now, why is that something worth noting? Because most of us, in certain pockets of our lives, we identify peace not with true biblical peace, but with the idea of the world, or the world's idea of peace, and that being non-warring, non-combative, not killing each other right now. How do I know? Pam, Christmas is only 2 months away. That means Thanksgiving for all of us is only a month away. Now think about this for just a moment. In most homes, what do we have with Thanksgiving and Christmas, said holidays? We have all the family coming together. And what are we just hoping for? We're just hoping for peace among all the family that assembles, right? Now when we say we're hoping for peace to just be present at our house during the Thanksgiving dinner or the Christmas dinner, what are we really saying? We're just saying we hope nobody gets mad at each other and yells at each other and throws a fit and ruins it for everyone else. Now, your family's not like that, right? Many of us know what it means to kind of be sitting on pins and needles, right? Okay, it's all kind of going good right now. Okay, whew. Oh, wow, they said that and this person didn't respond. I cannot believe it. Oh, good. And that's our idea of peace. That somebody hasn't said something rude and hateful and the other person hasn't responded and it hasn't been yelling and shouting or somebody getting mad and getting their feelings hurt and sitting in the corner pouting and sulking or someone leaving early for whatever reasons. If we can just get through the holidays without any major events, we'll call that good and we'll call it peace. Well, see, that's not exactly peace. Some people are of the mindset that if they can just pacify certain people at work, if they can just kind of keep this person, you know, just calm down, settle down, if everything will go okay, yeah, I know nobody really likes them and all that other stuff, and I don't really care for them either, but if we can just keep this particular person okay and somewhat calm and somewhat sedated as they go through their day, then we'll call that peace. Now, again, that is the world's idea of peace, but that is not God's idea of peace. Biblical peace, again, is when there is a state of tranquility, a state of a serenity, or a sense of calm in the situation. Whether it be with family, whether it be with friends, whether it be with church family, whether it be at work, wherever it may be, peace. A lot of breathing. Don't say that, okay? Don't act upon that. That's what peace is. Now, what does it mean to be a peacemaker? If this is peace, tranquility, serenity, and calm, what does it mean to be a peacemaker? It means to manufacture, to produce, or to create something. So he says, blessed. Blessed is the person who is a maker of peace. Blessed is the person who manufactures or produces or creates peace. That person shall be called a child of God. When you find someone who will manufacture peace, who will produce peace, who will create peace, essentially, if you find somebody who will do everything they can to ensure a state of peace in a situation, then what you find in them is someone who is truly a child of God. Now, I want us to think about a couple of things, okay? I first of all want us to think about this. Who did Christ lay the burden of responsibility on to make situations peaceful? He laid them on the shoulders of the disciples. Christ knew the kind of world that they were living in. Christ understood that not everyone out there was concerned with peace. Christ understood that, not everyone was about making life tranquil and serene and calm for people. And so here's what Christ was saying to the disciples. Listen, it is your responsibility to do everything that you can to make situations peaceful with people who would not otherwise make the situations peaceful. That's difficult because some people are just not very peaceful people. Some people, as you know as well as I do, they enjoy the controversy. They don't mind the little digs that they know are going to upset people. They don't mind being the jerk at Thanksgiving. And so it kind of brings us back to this thought in Romans chapter 12 where it's said that as much as lieth in us, we are to live peaceably with all men. Now again, what is the idea? The idea is this: as much as we possibly can, we have got to do everything to make a situation peaceful when it otherwise would not be peaceful. To some people, as I just said, they don't care. But it's the responsibility of the Christian to step up and say, now hold on, I will care. See, I've told you before about my dear aunt. I can't give her name because we're now putting the sermons on the internet, so I can't do that for fear of being incriminated one day. But I've got a lovely aunt who thrives on creating discord in the family. Susie and I met somebody this week, and she was of the same spirit. And I said to Susie, of this woman that we met this week, I'd like to give her my aunt's phone number because she'd be more than happy to argue with her. I mean, I'm at the youth center, and I'm just standing there in the lobby waiting on Susie to come out. And here's what the lady does. I'd never seen her before. Susie had had dealings with her prior to this. She came out, and there's a poster there, if you've ever seen it, of this little boy. He's in the pool, and the lady says to me, how old do you think that boy is? Kind of caught me off guard because I'd never really cared before. And I said, I don't know, 6 or 7. She goes, I think he's 5 or 6. And then she turned around and stormed off like I was an idiot. So Susie comes out of the dressing room and she says, did you just have dealings with her? I said, yeah. And I explained to her what happened. She said, that's the lady. I said, oh my word, she's crazy. She didn't even own a car, and that's probably good because there's no telling what she'd do with it. So she is walking home and we saw her. But literally, I said, I would like to just give my aunt's phone number to her because here's what I know of my aunt. She'll be more than happy to argue about anything. Now, what's my point? I'm simply saying, I know as well as you know, there are people out there and they don't want to make life easy for anyone. If they can be difficult, they will be difficult. If they can be obnoxious, they will be obnoxious. If they can be hateful, they will do it. If there is anything that they can do to disrupt the unity of the atmosphere, they're more than happy to do it. And isn't it weird that God allows every one of us to have at least one in our lives? See, I've got the crazy aunt and the crazy lady at the youth center that I'm going to try to avoid at all costs now. You may have the crazy uncle, you may have the crazy cousin, you may have the crazy dad or crazy mom or crazy in-law or whatever it is, but we've all got them. Every one of us have people in our lives truth be told, they disrupt everything, and if they'd just go away forever, we'd be just fine. But I've kind of discovered this, that when they do go away, there's someone there ready to take their place. You know, it's like, hey, I've been drafted up from the minor leagues to irritate you. You've done well, my friend. Now think about this. I need to back up and say this, because I know that we would never be the one, right, to disrupt peace. That wouldn't be our style. So it's always someone else. But nonetheless, working off that assumption that it's always someone else, here's what I've discovered of myself. In my humanity, whenever there is someone who creates peace, my response is not always, what can I do to keep peace? You ever had those moments with people and they're disrupting the peace, and it never even occurred to you to try to bring a calm to the situation? You want to be hateful? I can do it too. You know what I'm talking about? You want to be obnoxious? Hey, I can get down on that level and play that game with you. You want to throw out an insult? Hey, listen, I got a few things I'd like to say to you. And so I don't know if this would be true of you, but I know that it's been something I've struggled with at times, that when somebody wants to disrupt the spirit of peace in a situation or an atmosphere that I'm a part of, many times whenever they decide to get ugly, it never even enters my mind. Try to bring a calm to this. Immediately, I can come right back at them as quickly as they came at me or someone I care about. Now, whenever I don't even think about it, and whenever I immediately seek revenge or I immediately lash out at them, I'm not being a maker of peace. I am helping stir up the discord between the people, whatever the situation is. And whenever an outsider is looking in and they're saying this person said something, and my response immediately was to come back just as hateful or just as sharp-tongued or just as cutting as them, they're not looking at me going, what a child of God. They're thinking, what a jerk. Not only have I found my tendency to be somewhat responsive in a negative way sometimes when dealing with a person like that, sometimes, as much as I don't want to admit this, sometimes I just find myself more sensitive towards certain people than I am toward others. Anybody know what I'm talking about? You know, there are just certain people, and I've said this before in other contexts and other ideas, but you know, there are just certain people that if they say things, let it slide. Doesn't matter. I know they're teasing. Whether they are or not, it doesn't bother me because I've got a good relationship with them. Okay, they said this, they did this, they responded this way. Hey, no big deal. I know who they are. It's fine. You know what I just did? I created peace. I'm not going to let them stir me up. But if this person says or does the exact same thing, it may even flash through my mind, make peace, and I'm going, yeah, right, make peace, my foot. Because I'm tired of this jerk. I'm tired of this person who does, you know, this person is always causing problems, and I'm just going to tell them what I think, and I'm just going to address the situation, and I'm going to put a stop to it. And again, whenever we do this, some outsider is not being impressed with our Christian life. And so therefore, there's not this immediate assumption and this classification of us in this category of child of God. Because when they see us hateful and divisive and hurtful in the words that we speak or vengeful in our actions toward the person, that does not portray us in the right light as one who is the child of God. And I think there's at least another failure that we struggle with from time to time in this idea of being a maker of peace, and that is this. I think sometimes we just kind of give up on the idea. We will never have peace with this particular person. And so therefore, it's not even something that's really pursued by us. It's not even something that we really think about as being an option for us. It's not that it doesn't pass through our minds of, hey, we need to try to make this a calm and tranquil and serene environment for the holidays or for the birthday party or for the work atmosphere, whatever it may be. But it could be that many of us, at least with certain people in our lives, it's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. They'll always be a jerk. They'll always be hateful. They'll always act this way. They'll always be this way. And you know what? I'm just ready for it. And whenever it happens, I'll just be there to stick up for myself, to defend my family, to defend the other guys that I work with, whatever the situation may be. And it's like we don't even allow for the fact that peace is possible. Blessed are the peacemakers. Disciples, you will be blessed. You will enjoy gladness. You will enjoy joy when you are a peacemaker. Why? Because you will be identified as a child of God. Now, I don't know the thought process of every person here this evening, but I know myself and I do know some of you fairly well. So I think here's the struggle that sometimes we have. We want to say something like this: I'm no good at faking it, and I'm not going to fake it. You ever thought anything like that? I don't play those games. I don't like them, they don't like me, and we just know that. They stay to themselves, I stay to myself, and as little dealings with each other as we could possibly have. It's just better that way because I'm not going to fake it. We understand, don't we, that people learn that? People learn that. And if they know that our attitude is as sour toward that person as theirs is toward us, again, that doesn't portray us in the light as being a true child of God. I know a little bit of what I'm talking about in this particular situation. There are people that I just, don't make me talk to them. And if I can avoid them, I'm a much happier person. But that is not the right spirit for me as a child of God to have. I need to be willing to see them. I need to be willing to greet them. I need to be willing to not let them get under my skin. I need to be willing to not let them make me more explosive in my response toward them. I need to be the one that no matter what, it's not that I fake it, but it's that I genuinely want to make peace. But another argument that I think sometimes we have is this. It's not so much that I don't want to fake it as much as I'd have to compromise in order to have peace with them. And I ain't compromising. Now, understand, please, I know I have preached this and I believe it and I hold to this. There are certain people in our lives that we don't need to go out of our way with to associate with. We just don't. I do not need to go out of my way to associate with certain people. However, when my path should cross with theirs, I have the responsibility as a child of God to at least be peaceful with them. And you can do that without compromising. And you can do that without being a fake and a phony. You can see people that you don't agree with. You can see people that you don't like where they stand, that you don't like or agree with what they're doing or how they're living or whatever it may be. And no, you're not going to go out of your way to spend time with them and all this other stuff. But should it happen, at least in our small community, hey, there's so-and-so. Okay, I'm not going to avoid them. I'm not going to go down the other aisle because I can't stand to see them. No. Hello. Hi. How are you? Why is that important? Because we don't want to do it. We don't want to. I don't want to be nice to this person. I don't want to be calm. I don't want to be, I don't want to do it. And so I'll just make it easier for me. I'll just avoid the individual. And again, as that begins to be made known and that begins to be a part of our reputation and our testimony, people are no longer attracted to us of our testimony of salvation. And they're not, again, categorizing us as a child of God. They're saying things like, man, that guy's got issues. And many times the blame, while not rightly put on us, is put on us because we're not handling the situation correctly. Does this make sense? We're the Christian. We're supposed to be the peacemaker, not them. And so if there's not peace between the relationship, they may say something like this: oh, I understand where you're coming from. I understand your point of view, but... And we don't want them to say that. We just want them to side with us and say, yeah, it's all their fault. But the reality is this: as a child of God, I have a responsibility to react to people in this world in a manner that is peaceful. So I don't have the right and I don't have the privilege of responding in a hateful way, in a negative way, in a hurtful way, or a condescending manner. I don't have that right. What I have to do is do everything I can to make situations peaceful. Will there be people out there who test it to the nth degree? Yes. But it is my responsibility, without compromising, without being a total fake and all that other stuff, it is my responsibility to be a man who does everything I can to make peace. Do we want to be called a child of God? There's no greater honor, we said just a moment ago. Do we want to be called a child of God? Yeah, then we've got to look at how we interact with those around us. What our actions and what our responses are toward the ungodly and even the godly sometimes. You know, those who would still push our buttons in ways that we wouldn't prefer. We've got to evaluate and say, okay, how do I respond? Because if I respond in the same unpeaceful manner that they have initiated things with, then I'm not helping the situation at all. And the world is never impressed with that kind of a testimony. Let's all stand tonight and bow our heads for a word of prayer. Father, I pray that you'd help us tonight to be willing to do some soul searching with your aid. Lord, I pray that you'd help us tonight to see how much of an effort we put